So, you want to know what on earth is happening? Then sit back and listen as this guy next door speaks. But first, here's a song to set the tone for today's show.
This is more than music, more than beats and rhymes. These rappers dumbing down and brainwashing the people's minds. It's more than music, so I'm ready to ride. All my enemies for the cause, I am ready to die. I'm ready to ride. For the cause, I am ready to die. I'm ready to ride. For the cause, I am ready to die. I'm in this business, yeah, this is a diss. The rappers influencing little kids with ignorance. They say I'm jealous and hating because they getting rich. But I don't do this for money, so I don't give a shit. I'm in this business, yeah, this is a diss. The rappers influencing little kids with ignorance. They say I'm jealous and hating because they getting rich. But I don't do this for money, you fucking idiots. I'm asking what y'all rapping for. Stacks of cash, plaques, awards, flashy cars and fancy bras. What the fuck's your passion for? Fashion, so you bragging how your mink is dragging on the floor. Skin your ass alive so you can feel what animals endure. Then wear your skin to show the arrogance of my wealth. Punk boy, the only person you embarrassing is yourself. Look in the mirror, what do you see? Are you a Malcolm who wants you to be? Do you follow the dream of Dr. King and others who fought to be free? You ain't a G because you flaws. Getting that money don't make you a boss. Because a G and a boss is someone who fights for freedom at any cost. Many are lost, but many know about the influence within the flow. Instead of helping their people to grow, they taking advantage so they can get dough. I'm letting them know that I've been chosen. Fake rappers I am exposing. Colder than frozen when I'm composing lyrical symphonies like I'm Beethoven. With the flow and I am outstanding. Now I'm growing and I'm expanding. I am getting big. Y'all little kids, y'all need some reprimanding. No amount of money will ever buy you respect. Did Jesus die to hang with blood diamonds on your neck? No amount of money will make you mature mentally. You're essentially working for the penitentiaries, for the police, the corporations and judicial system. By glamorizing crime, you're helping them produce more victims. Of the war on drugs, you ain't a thug to you, it's fiction. Cause you ain't living that life in the image you depicting. Whether you like it or not, you influencing children. They got no God and so they worshiping you like religion. Instead of wisdom, you trick them with words and symbolism. To sell your records, you helping the police fill the prisons. You working for the man, you're claiming you ain't a snitch. Came in the game for the fame and the chips. If you don't sell out, then you ain't getting rich. Cause you ain't shit if you ain't making hits. Most of these rappers ain't even legit. So you know I gotta get them on my automatic weapon. I click, clack, clack when I bang my clip. Lyrical rounds, I'm shutting them down. I come from the town of the shine. North side, a rider, truth provider. I am down to die for what I believe in. Never deceiving or leaving my people behind. Rappers prey on the weakest of minds. They making they dope, I'm misleading the blind. And they use derogatory terms and verses to offend homosexuals and women, but we not concerned with them. But when a white person uses the N-word to refer to a friend, all these rappers in the industry are talking about murdering them. Fuck your double standards. All you snitches are some hypocrites. If it's in your benefit, then watch how quick you flip the script. I don't give a fuck about your money, cause your clothes, your ice. I do not respect you cause you sold out and your soul's the price. I'm in this business, yeah, this is a diss. The rappers influencing little kids with ignorance. They say I'm jealous and hating because they getting rich. But I don't do this for money, so I don't give a shit. I'm in this business, yeah, this is a diss. The rappers influencing little kids with ignorance. They say I'm jealous and hating because they getting rich. But I don't do this for money, you fucking idiots. This is more than music, more than beats and rhymes. These rappers dumbing down and brainwashing the people's minds. It's more than music, so I'm ready to ride. All my enemies for the cause, I am ready to die. I'm ready to ride. For the cause, I am ready to die. I'm ready to ride. For the cause, I am ready to die.
And that was Dsu Automatic with This Is a Diss. And this is Ivan from Phoenix. And you're listening to Guy Next Door Speaks. Today is Tuesday, August 18, 2015. And it's been a while since I've recorded podcasts, but there's plenty of information out there. The key is that people need to go out and look for this information. So I'm not too worried about putting out my own stuff. I just have to direct people to the information that's already out there. And that's what I do with my website, FreeYourMindAZ.com, and my meetup group by the same name, Free Your Mind AZ. Today's a special episode. I have a special guest joining me today. I've met him a couple of times already at the last two Free Your Mind conferences. And this past week, I came across some new information that he's putting out regarding a new documentary biopic called Straight Outta Compton, based on the rap group NWA. So upon listening and watching his little update videos, I made quite a few connections to some information and thoughts that I have of my own, and I reached out to this individual to bring him on the show so he can share his thoughts and we can bounce off each other and share this information with the public. And I'm talking about Lennon Honor. Welcome to the show, Lennon.
Oh, my pleasure, Ivan. It's good to talk with you, and I appreciate you having me on the show. My pleasure.
All right. Thanks for joining me, and thanks for the speedy reply. I mean, this was the end of last week that I reached out to you, and here we are already, no more than a week later, getting this on, you know, getting this show done. So I'm not going to talk too much. I know we have about an hour, and I've seen your video updates, and they're totaling maybe 3 or 4 hours, so you have quite a bit of information out there to put out. So I'll just step back and let you have the floor, and you can speak on what you want to speak on. And if I have anything that I like to chime in, I'll just jump in and we'll play it by ear.
Yeah, so, sure. So
the floor is yours.
Okay. And you specifically, you want to address my document, the upcoming documentary.
Yes, your upcoming documentary, right, regarding NWA, Straight Outta Compton.
Yes. Okay. Well, let me ask you a question just to get started.
Yes.
Because I know that you played a hip-hop track to start off this podcast.
Yes.
And you actually sent it to me in advance. You said it would be okay to play this before our interview.
Right.
And so I listened to it, and I was like, sure. So the question I want to pose for you is why did you feel it necessary to send me the track first to have me listen to it before you included it on the beginning of this interview?
Well, the reason was because that particular track addresses a lot of the stuff that you bring up in your documentary or in your updates, basically.
Yes.
About rappers, you know, degrading women and putting out negative messages and everything. So that's why I asked if it was okay to use that to begin the show, because that helps set the tone. People will
Yes.
hear that and hear those lyrics and be like, well, what's this about? They're not talking about, you know, bitches and hoes. Oh, before we even start, now that we've started, I wanted to do a quick disclaimer that there may be explicit language, because there's no holding back. You know, where this is a podcast, this doesn't go over any local public airwaves. So to keep it real, we have to, you know, speak like they speak or speak like what's spoken. So there might be some dialogues and words used that might be offensive to some. So just listener discretion is advised.
Yes, yes. But you bring up a very important point, and that is to have a level of discernment about the type of music and the types of lyrics that we do listen to. And I think I want to ask you that question because I respect you for taking the time to ask me first and to let me listen first, because I do take this particular issue of programming, media programming in particular, coming through particular musical genres. I'm very critical of it because I want to make sure that we're clear that it can have a very negative effect on people. Lyrical content in particular, vibrationally, meaning music itself, different sounds being put together can have an impact on people, but also the lyrical content can have a major impact. And so when we talk about mind control and the impact, negative impact that lyrics can have, it's important that we think critically about any given artist, in particular in hip hop. So just to give people an overview of what I've done, I grew up during the time period wherein hip hop was really starting to flourish on the West Coast. And one of the preeminent hip hop artists or hip hop groups at that time was NWA. They released their first album in 1987, and they are a West Coast based rap group. They also are considered to be the forerunners for what is called gangster rap, although there were artists and groups prior to that that actually had gangster rap elements in their lyrical composition. But NWA took it to the next level. It went global. And they had a major impact and influence on the direction of hip hop from that point on, even to this day, still have had a profound impact. What I've done is I've taken a critical look at their lyrical composition. And the idea is that you got to look at the lyrics, because the lyrics is where the programming is at. The music really massages, if you will, the subconscious mind. It opens up the subconscious mind, because music has that type of effect. It puts you in a low, it can put you in a low state wherein you're not necessarily thinking critically. And so therefore, you know, your subconscious mind is activated, and therefore things can be embedded into your subconscious mind. And the embedded information usually comes from the lyrics that are accompanied with the actual, you know, music. So what I've done is, I've looked at the lyrical composition of NWA, and that includes four albums, their discography. Again, they had their first album in 1987. They did another album in 1988. Then they did a re-release for the first album in 1989. They did another album in 1990. By that time, Ice Cube had left the group. And then 1991, they did their final album. And what I did was, because they have this film that just came out, it's a biopic straight out of Compton. I was asking myself, because I grew up listening to NWA, and I was saying to myself, why is it that out of all of the hip hop groups, this is the one that is in Hollywood is chosen? And there's this major movie that's being put in, and millions of dollars put into production, so forth and so on. Why this particular group? And really, is it really, should this be the group that should get this type of exposure all these years later, 25 years later? I found that to be intriguing, because I remember listening to NWA growing up, their first album in 1987. I was about 12 years old. From what I remember, the music itself was very, negative. I'm talking about the lyrical composition was very negative. The words that were being used, how they talked about women was very disrespectful. They also promoted sexual promiscuity. They also promoted what I call ghetto centrism, having a certain type of orientation to the world that is within the scope of the extreme levels of abuse that is found within the impoverished African-American community, going all the way back to then, still exists to this day. What they were promoting wasn't necessarily positive. So I really started to think about this, like, why this group out of all groups? And then I said to myself, you know, I'm going to do critical analysis, because that's what I tend to do. I tend to take a critical approach to any given media artifact. I have documentaries on my website, linenhonorfilms.com, where I've analyzed music videos. I've analyzed Walt Disney films, his initial films called the Alice series, and I looked at the programming, again, the subconscious programming that was present, subliminal messages that were present. I've done a lot of documentary work on linenhonor.com, dealing with the BP oil spill and the media mind control aspect of that. It goes on and on and on. So I wanted to approach this particular group in that way. Mind you, when I was a child, I didn't take a critical approach. I was just a fan. Fans are fanatics. Fanatics do not think critically about what they are a fan of. You can't be a fanatic and out of your mind and think critically at the same time. So what I wanted to do this time around, here we are like 20, 25 years later, is take a critical look at the lyrical composition of NWA. And what I found was staggering. What I found was the major themes that were being promoted by NWA were very destructive. Not only were the major themes destructive, they also had an impact on people's lives, because the major themes and certain words were repeated over and over and over again. The more and more you repeat a word, it becomes a program. And once it becomes a program, it's embedded within the subconscious mind, and then it changes people's behavior. So you can literally transform the behavior patterns of any group of people if you give them a certain type of programming that's repeated over and over and over again. This is straight mind control. So what I did was I started listening to the discography of NWA. I started with the first album, and I went through the first, I can't remember how many tracks was on that first album. I think it was 12. It might have been 11. But I went through all of the tracks, and I started to write out and take note of what were the words that were being said over and over again, how often. Okay, so I would mark down which words were being said. So if they said, as an example, if they said, if they gave a reference to drugs, I would mark down once. If they said they gave reference to drugs again, I would mark down twice. Sometimes it was a language. If they said a nigga, every time they would say nigga, I would mark it down. And so for each track, I began to compile data in terms of what was being repeated over and over again, because that ultimately it will indicate the programming. It will also indicate the general theme that was being presented by NWA going back 25 years ago. So I did that for the first album. Then I calculated everything for the first album. I went track by track, but then I added up everything for each track, compiled for the first album. And then I went to the second album. I did the same thing. And then I went to the third album. I did the same thing. And I went to the fourth album, fourth and final album. I did the same thing. And then I calculated everything all the way across the board. So what I was ultimately what I've done, and this is part of my documentary, I'll be presenting more of this data when I finish my documentary. What I've done is scientifically, I've gone through and calculated. It's called data collection. I've collected the data and I crunched the numbers to figure out what were the phrases, what was the language that was being repeated, what were the phrases, what were the general themes that were being presented as programs through this particular group that we call NWA. NWA, by the way, stands for Niggas with Attitudes. And preeminently, the major theme that was presented through NWA's work happened to be the disrespect of Black women. Here we are 25 years later, and this programming is being represented to the world. So the idea is that if you produce a movie, what's going to happen is people who weren't even born 25 years ago are going to be inclined, if you promote it the right way, they're going to be inclined to view the movie. Also fans, okay, fanatics will also go and view the movie. And once these people go, and then some people are just kind of like curious, they're going to view the movie too. So what happens is now we have a whole new generation of people who are going to be exposed to the same type of programming that I was exposed to growing up at the age of 12. And the preeminent theme that was being presented through the music was the disrespect of Black women. And we can also extend this and we can say disrespect of women. This disrespect came in many different forms. It came in terms of words that were being used, calling women bitches, calling women hoes, sluts, skeezers. This is all language we used to use growing up, in large part because of NWA. We were exposed to that. It changed how we thought. It changed our language and it changed our behaviors growing up. Disrespect in terms of sexualized content and over-sexualizing, straight sexism against women, references to fellatio or women sucking dicks. This is all presented as a major theme, especially the second and third album of NWA. What I also found was that as the albums progressed, the more you went through the albums and you got towards the fourth album, the more sexualized the content became, the more graphic the content became, the more destructive, the more violent the content, I'm talking about the lyrical content, became. So the idea, and I have the figures, I'm going to share with you a little bit later on. I have to actually get two other pages that I have on my desk inside the other room. I'll get that in just a moment. Now I'll share with you the actual final figures that I calculated for the major themes that were being presented within NWA. But what I was going to say was that for the movie to be represented at this time, it's important for us to take a critical look at what was the general theme of NWA back then, and are those general themes being represented accurately within the NWA film, which is called Straight Outta Compton? And let me just say this before I finish here. I actually went to go see the film, and I'm going to be doing a video on this, just a follow-up video on the progress of my documentary. I went to go see the film when it premiered, and I also went out there to get video footage for my documentary. And you know, what was fascinating was that in general, the major themes that they presented within their music, okay, in particular, the disrespect of Black women, was actually repackaged within the movie itself and represented. So in other words, how they were portraying Black women in the documentary, in the film, Straight Outta Compton, was in line with the negative attitudes that NWA members had towards Black women as expressed within their lyrical content. And you would think that to present the movie, the biopic, that they would try to transform that a bit to where they can still present this issue of the disrespect of women, but not do it in such a way to where you're basically programming the next generation while they're watching the movie to accept the normalization of the disrespect of Black women. And so what I'm saying is that there are scenes in the movie where in how the Black women are dressed, how they carry themselves, sexualized situations. There's this one scene where it reminds me of Two Live Crew's album. They had an album cover and they're on the beach and there's these maybe four or five Black women they're on the beach and they're facing away from you. So you only see their backsides, and under them is laying on the sand. There are Two Live Crew members that I remember that particular album cover. Two Live Crew was what people call porno rap, but it was all disrespect of Black women. There's a scene in straight out of Compton that reminds me of that particular album cover. And they started off, it's a pool party, and the camera is directed into the pool, but you can see the reflection of these women and you can see their backsides. And then the camera comes up slowly but surely, and these women are jiggling and shaking their backsides. This is totally unnecessary to present. It's totally unnecessary because it fortifies the disrespect of black women. And you can still get that, get the message out about these so-called pool parties and the misogyny that was taking place and you know, the sexualized interactions and so forth. You can still do that without furthering these negative stereotypical images of black women. So it was fascinating to me that the movie, on one hand, it promoted a lot of the lyrical content that was present in N.W.A.'s discography. But then on the other hand, it didn't provide a critique of that behavior, the behavior of N.W.A. members. Dr. Dre being abuser of women, having at least 7 different children by at least 4 different women. Eazy-E, same thing. I think 6 children by 4 different women, something to that effect. They didn't talk about the misogyny, DJ Yella and his involvement with the porn industry. They didn't talk about any of that stuff. So it was really, it was almost like a way of still promoting the disrespect of black women, but then also encouraging people to somehow embrace these characters, Dr. Dre, Ice Cube, Eazy-E, MC Ren, as somehow being respectful, as somehow being honorable. I can go on and on and on. My documentary, what I'm going to do is I'm going to not only show the figures that I calculated through the data collection, but I'll also provide, I'll back it up with the actual lyrical content. Let me just give you a quick example. And for the viewers out there, on the first album, NWA's first album, there were 12 tracks, not 11. Actually, there were 11, but I counted 12 because in the re-release, they released another song titled A Bitch is a Bitch. The major themes, there were 177 instances where in NWA members, men on that particular album disrespected women. 143 of those instances were by NWA members. 34 of those instances were by other members of the group called Posse. They called it NWA and the Posse. This is I can't remember, the Feel the Fresh crew and some other rappers as well. So just on the first album alone, 12 tracks, 50 minutes, you have 177 instances of disrespect of black women. You also have 87 instances of self-aggrandizement. That means that the rapper is trying to make himself appear to be better than what he really is. Hip hop, to a great degree, is founded on this particular principle. And part of it is playing the dozens. You make yourself appear to be better than you are by disrespecting other people. So that's why when you hear rap, you also often hear people saying, I'm going to do this and I got this and I. Self-aggrandizement, making yourself appear to be better than someone else, but then also dissing other people, making them to appear to be less than what you are. That's a major component to hip hop, and it comes out of this particular form of psychological warfare that is present and has been present for generations within the African-American community of what we call playing the dozens. It's an extreme form of teasing wherein you belittle, you disrespect through you verbally abuse someone, and then they do the same to you. And whoever can take it wins. The person who breaks down, who gets emotional, who wants to fight or who starts to fight or who starts to cry, they lose. This is a game that comes out of levels of self-hate that is present within the African-American community. There were 66 references or negative references to the female body. You know, as an example, you know, nappy hair, weave, you know, ugly, that kind of thing. 66 references, negative references to the female body. That's just on 12 tracks. This is just the first album. Bitch, calling black women bitches 65 times on 12 tracks over 50 minutes and 9 seconds. Also, disrespect of men 61 times. So it's not just the disrespect of women, it's the disrespect of men too. References to alcohol 59 times. References to drugs 34 times. The use of the term shit 33 times. The use of the term fuck 28 times. It's a general use of the term. And then references to money 21 times. References to cars 19 times. General violence against black men 16 times, NWA members committing violence against black men. Calling women hoes 15 times, disrespect of other rappers 14 times. The use of the term nigga 13 times. Other ones too here, just to reference real quickly, suck my dick 4 times. The more and more you go through the discography, the more and more references to sucking dick or fellatio is expressed. Fuck the police is said 1 time. police violence against black women one time, police violence against black men one time, violence against the police one time. Interestingly enough, and I'll end with this, police violence against black women one time, police violence against black men one time. So that's two instances wherein the police commit violent acts against black men and black women. But when you look at the violence that is committed against black men by NWA members, is 16. So that's 16 instances wherein violence is committed against black men by NWA members. And then there's 10 instances wherein violence is committed against black females by NWA members. So in total, there's 26 instances of NWA members committing in their lyrical composition, committing violence against black males and females, but only two for police. And then they say, fuck the police. So this is the thing. When you start to do the critical analysis, you realize that in their own lyrical composition, it's not the police who are doing the damage towards black people. It's them. They're the main people who are abusing, disrespecting, harming, maiming, in some cases killing black people.
Sorry for that short little technical glitch. The internet dropped there for a few seconds. Here's the rest of the interview with Lennon Honor.
Okay. Well, I'll just say this last part. So if you can imagine a young impressionable boy who's 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, or even 18, 19, 20 for that matter, and in particular, let's say within the African-American community, and let's say that maybe the father isn't there to provide them with the appropriate amount of guidance, or maybe the mother isn't an active participant in terms of providing the appropriate amount of guidance, that child is impressionable. Or let's say it's a girl or female that is impressionable. If they hear these types of lyrics that is promoting disrespect of black women, that is promoting self-aggrandizement, that has negative references to the female body, that is calling women bitches and hoes, that is also promoting the abuse of black men and black women. A young child who hears that and it's repeated, if they listen to the album once, they get the programming. But just imagine if they listen to the album twice, or if they listen to the album three times, or if they listen to it 40 times. The repetition ultimately enacts a level of programming within the subconscious mind that changes not only their psychology, how they think about themselves, how they think about others, how they think about other black people, how they think about male-female relationships, but it also enacts a level of behavior modification. This is all to say that the figures, and I'll have more that I'll share a little bit later on, the figures indicate to me, and I'll be showing this in my documentary, that NWA, in terms of the lyrical composition, was not designed to uplift or to benefit black people. In point of fact, it was designed to either keep African-American or black folk in a position of disharmony and disrespect, or to degrade those who had levels of harmony in their life or had levels of respect in their life, to degrade that into the realm of disrespect and disharmony. And so then I asked the question, why would this particular movie glorify NWA 25 years later? And the glorification is really designed to indoctrinate the next generation. When I went to go see the film, it was mainly younger people who were there, to indoctrinate the next generation into this paradigm of dysfunctionality that is present, clearly evident within the discography and the lyrical composition of NWA.
Yep. Yeah, I ended up seeing the movie on Saturday night, and I looked around, and about 70% of the audience was maybe 25 years or younger.
Yes.
So that was surprising. Well, not surprising, but yet still surprising that, wow, you know, here's – I would have thought that a group that's, you know, what, 25 years old, almost 30 years old – that would have a more mature audience coming out, but that wasn't the case. There was maybe a handful of older people there to see this, but the majority, like you say, was younger audience. And I guess with, you know, Dr. Dre and Beats Audio and Ice Cube and his movies, they've been able to keep the younger population interested in them, and now with this movie, bring them in to, you know, get hooked on the programming, like you say. And it's true what you were talking about, that in the film, they did visualize their lyrics. Like mm-hmm. you said, when I think of females in the movie, the only thing that mainly comes to mind is a lot of females basically naked or in bikinis dancing around shaking their asses,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, and very rarely they never mentioned the females in their lives. You know, they only showed one female that had a baby by Dr. Dre. That was it. And she drove off. So, you know, to make you feel sorry for him. Mm-hmm. And then the one he married, then they showed Ice Cube with one female at the end that he's married with. And then they showed the one with Eazy-E that was somewhat intelligent that did his financial stuff. That was it. They didn't show them involved with any other females aside from, you know, just having sex with them. That one particular hotel scene. Talk about all the oral stuff. Mm-hmm. They had all this crazy sex going on. And what do they show? In the bathroom, there's Eazy-E receiving a, you know, blowjob from one of these females. So right there on the screen, like, hey, this is the life. This is the only thing that women are good for, basically what they were showing.
Yes, and then instead of teaching a lesson, you know, because you know, they say that Eazy-E died of AIDS. Well, that's all because of sexual promiscuity. Okay, whether that's true or not, because there's people who suggest that maybe it was some other reason. Well, that's not even the point. The point is that he lived a sexually promiscuous lifestyle, and as a consequence, your body it's going to have an impact on your body, negative or in most cases negative. If you live a sexually promiscuous lifestyle, you're going to pay a price. It could be a venereal disease. I mean, it could be some life-threatening illness. It also can be creating children that you don't want. In the case of Eazy-E, in the case of Dr. Dre, absentee fathers. They don't talk anything about that. And see, it could that particular there's a lesson that could have been taught to the next generation about the importance of having sexual discipline, in particular for young African-American males. It's a major issue in the African-American community, absentee fathers and living sexually promiscuous lives. In fact, there's many males who believe that that's what African-American males who believe that that's what it means to be a man. There's a lot of lessons that could have been taught that they didn't teach in the movie. Like, there's no moral to the story because it's absent of morality. If anything, the only like moral to the story is don't let money get in the way of your friendship. Right, as a group, because ultimately that's what they propose is what dissolved NWA. And I've been also researching, I've been reading biographies into the lives of Dr. Dre, Ice Cube, Jerry Heller, who's also in the film, featured prominently in the film. Also been doing research on Ruthless Records, how it was organized, but also Death Row Records and Tupac and Biggie Beef and all this kind of stuff. The point is that there was no moral to the story that I walked away from that would have compensated for all the degrees of disrespect that was present in the NWA's discography. And I had hoped, this was my hope, that somehow they would have taken the experiences of NWA members, Dr. Dre, Eazy-E, MC Ren, Yella, Dr. Ice Cube, take those particular experiences and then turn them around in such a way they can teach the next generation a lesson about the importance of respecting women, about the importance of having a level of sexual discipline, about a lesson about why it is important not to have these misogynistic and sexist ideas about women in general, but black women in particular, because how they portrayed black women in the film was absolutely, it was extremely disrespectful. But that wasn't done. The movie wasn't used to teach anything of consequence or value. What it really was designed to do, from my vantage point, was to give a humanistic quality to the NWA members, to where you can feel some sort of emotional connection to them in their struggles without realizing that they did more harm than good in the first place.
I think it also victimized them. It made them look like victims, three victims. Eazy-E got abused by the Jewish white manager, whatever. He got all the money, so he was victimized by him, so they smeared him. Then we had the police got smeared heavily in there. Every time they showed any black person on the street, here came the police, throwing them to the ground and being abusive. So, you know, and it happened to them outside of their recording studio, so the police got smeared heavily here too. And especially, I was surprised, Suge Knight. Every time they showed Suge Knight, it was pretty much an embarrassment to black men too, because it's like, look, any big black guy, he's an asshole and bully, and man, they just threw this guy under the bus. But all these three principal characters just victimizing, you know, are the three main stars of the movie, the Dr. Dre, Ice Cube, or Eazy-E. So by the end of the movie, you have people there crying because Eazy-E was dying of AIDS, or, you know, when he died. And I'm like, wow. So, you know, they achieved that purpose of getting that emotional connection to our three protagonists.
Yes.
And not even, you know, discarding all the, you know, what got them there, you know, all the abuse, all the disrespect, all the, you know, the negativity that they did to the black communities.
Including the abusive nature, let's say as an example, Dr. Dre, the abusive nature that he has had. He has a long history of abuse of black women. I'm talking about physical violence against black women. None of that was discussed whatsoever. But the humanization effect was meant to pull people's emotions so that they connect with these characters without looking at the fact that they're in their discography. I'm talking about what they actually produce, the degrees of destruction, negativity, disrespect and harm that they cause in terms of the African-American community far outweighs any degree of so-called victimization that they supposedly had in their journey towards making all these millions of dollars. So it's interesting how they did that. They really tried to build it up. By the time Eazy-E is on his deathbed, in essence, they built up this emotional attachment. They also built it up by talking about Dr. Dre's brother dying. And when Dr. Dre finds out, this is all emotionalism. The point is that when we talk about critical analysis, that's not that all of that is besides the point. The point is, what did they produce? What was their contribution? Did they contribute anything that was positive or was it negative? And when you look at, you do the lyrical analysis and you take a critical approach to not only what they produce in terms of as hip hop artists, but then also how they live their lives during that time period, you realize that most of it was negative. So, but when we walk away from the film, people are kind of have been programmed and really led on this path to where they sympathize with these particular protagonists. And then the antagonist, you know, Jerry Heller, the antagonist, Suge Knight, always in red, he's like the devil figure inside of the film. I mean, it set up this dynamic and people don't realize that even when Dr. Dre was with Suge Knight in Death Row Records, he was still producing negative content. And he should have made a lot of money. That's the other thing in terms of read the biographies. There's a lot of things that were going on behind the scenes for those rap artists that weren't necessarily positive. But to blame it all on Suge Knight and then to blame it on, or at least a portion of it on Suge Knight and also blame a portion on it on Jerry Heller, it doesn't excuse the fact that NWA members as a group, not only how they lived was not positive, but also what they produced was not positive. But if you pull on people's emotions to where they're crying because Eazy-E is dying of AIDS, not thinking about the fact that he lived a sexually promiscuous lifestyle and he got many women pregnant and he was an absentee father and he had an extreme level of disrespect towards women in general, but disrespectful towards black women in particular, people dismiss all of that because their emotions have been manipulated. That's an aspect of mind control. Their perception of Eazy-E at the end of the film was that somehow he was a hero. Why? Their perception of Dr. Dre at the end of the film was somehow he's a hero. Why? Their perception of Ice Cube at the end of the film is somehow he's a hero. Why? What did they produce during that time period when they were releasing their albums from 1987 to 1991 that was positive, that would allow us to say, you know what, this is someone to look up to? And if you guys do the lyrical analysis, you realize that there was absolutely nothing that was actually created within their lyrical content that was a benefit to people, that was positive, that would give a person the idea or notion that somehow this should be a hero that I should look up to. But if the film kind of molds them in that way, what happens? People are now going to be more inclined to go back and listen to the negative content. Interesting.
Yes. Well, if you change the perception, then you can change the reality.
Yes. And let me do this. Give me just about 10 seconds. I have to get this piece of paper. If you want to say something real quick, I'll be right back. Because I want to share y'all with the final calculations that I have, just to give people an idea. I'll be right back.
Sure. No problem. All right. And let's see. Well, yep, this is all interesting stuff. You can find these videos that Lennon Honor is referring to, these update videos. They're on YouTube on YouTube under NWA a Critical Analysis. And I think they might be on, there's a link on them on LennonHonorFilms.com. And his other site is LennonHonor.com. That basically touches on his consultations and audio recordings and interviews he's had with different guests. I was on the website earlier today, actually, and was surprised to see how many guests he's had on. He was talking about pregnancy and childbirths and stuff. He had Janice Barcelo, someone else who spoke at the Free Your Mind conference on there. He's had Mark Passio on there. So check out his websites, LennonHonor.com and LennonHonorFilms.com. So Lennon, are you back?
Yes, I am. Okay. All right. So I just wanted to share this with people just so that we're clear in terms of the programming. It's one thing, the perception that people have all these years later, and then also the perception that people are led to have after this film. I'm also going to do an analysis of the film too, that I'll have up on YouTube within the next couple of days. But it's in terms of critical analysis and thinking critically, you really have to look at what is of substance and what is their body of work. Okay. Not the perception of them. Okay, but what is their actual body of work? So by the time I got done with the data collection, which is a major component to my research, the research phase of my documentary, The numbers that I calculated were staggering. Again, the repetition, the more something is repeated, that it shows what the programming is. It shows what the main theme that is being promoted within that particular music. It can be a television show. It can be a movie, any kind of media artifact, whatever is repeated over and over again. You can identify that as being the major theme or the program. So I calculated all four albums. There were 48 tracks included for all the four albums. It's 48 tracks in total. And in terms of runtime, it's 3 hours, 9 minutes and 44 seconds. So in essence, NWA, in terms of as a group, of course, members did their own solo albums, like Eazy-E did his own solo album. And then later Ice Cube left the group. He did his own solo album, which also speaks to this other dynamic in terms of black self-hate that we tend to, if you remind me, if we can get into this too, in terms of psychologically, why there's so much beefing in hip hop. A lot of it has to do with the fact that we're raised as African-American males to hate each other. So then other people, it plays something on an extreme levels, the levels of self-hate. Sometimes it's like the verbal hate, how we talk to each other and how we talk about each other and how we diss each other. But then on the extreme levels, we get into what people call black on black crime. We're in, you know, a black male will be inclined to kill another black male because of some kind of an issue. But we're really raised that way. So part of what I'm saying is that that is indicative of when Ice Cube left the group and the type of fighting that began to take place and the beefing that was taking place. That's just reflective of the levels of self-hate that we tend to have as African-American males, that we tend to have towards each other. And then when Dr. Dre left, the same thing took place. People turn
more,
on
more like a jealousy of success. Yes. Together, you want to do it together because you want a piece of it. But when somebody breaks off and does their thing and succeeds, you become jealous. You're like, no, how come you're doing this on your own and it's working for you and not for me? So you got to tear the other person down.
That's right. That's right. And that tearing down, that's playing the dozens too. That's why the rhymes itself is just playing the dozens. You're disrespecting the other person. There's also another dynamic that we tend to deal with in African American community, that you have to remain loyal no matter what. There's this concept of snitching. You never snitch. So even if someone is doing something wrong, you don't snitch. And from my vantage point, like if someone's doing wrong, you need to call that out for what it is. As a man, you call it out. You check that behavior. But if you don't call out that particular behavior, then what you're doing is you're reinforcing that behavior that is very destructive to that person. It's destructive to you. It's destructive to your community.
You become an enabler.
That's right. You become a participant. You see, and that's psychologically, African-American folk, we have some serious psychological issues that we need to address, including black self-hate, the snitching, no snitching complex. It's really like this, I don't know, that programming. It's you have to remain loyal, but then also how we tend to turn on each other when someone begins to step out of a particular paradigm and start to have levels of success. Okay, so that is exactly what took place with NWA members. All of this is fortified in the lyrical composition of NWA. It's a program, and it's repeated over and over again. So based upon the data collection, again, I went track by track, and I began to outline what words are being used over and over again, track by track, album by album, and then I calculated it all. This would be the main thesis of my documentary, because this is all scientific. Anyone can go and do the research and listen to the albums and compile these figures, but people tend not to do that. They tend not to think critically, and they tend to just listen for entertainment value. 553 instances of disrespect towards black women.
That's just one time playing each album straight once.
That's just one time playing four albums. You play four albums, that's just 3 hours and 9 minutes. So we can, in my documentary, I'm going to crunch some numbers. How many times on average can you expect disrespect of black women per hour? Per every 30 minutes, per minute, how often per track, how often can you expect to hear the disrespect? So people think about that. If you're listening to music and it's tapping into your subconscious mind and you're receiving programming that is disrespectful towards black women or women in general, but just black women in particular, how is that going to impact your psychology, how you see black women? How is that going to impact how you relate to black women? Does it devalue them? If it devalue, and then just imagine you're a young child, very impressionable. You're 8, 9, 10 years old, 11, 12, 13 years old. How does that begin to formulate? How does it impact your psychology as you're coming into adulthood or you're coming into manhood, if you will? 553 instances of disrespect of black women, 519 by NWA members, 34 times by posse members, just in 3 hours and 9 minutes. The term nigga was used 385 times. And I've already talked about this. Like, I don't take offense when people, if they call me a nigga. I don't really, because I grew up, and that's how we used to talk. But in terms of setting a better precedence for the next generation, I don't tolerate that for my children. For instance, I've never called my children niggas. They don't even know what nigga is. Okay, and I take pride in that, because so many of us, you know, our parents, they called us niggas more time than they said I loved you. How many times did NWA say I love you? Zero. How many times did they call each other niggas? 385 times. That's a problem. And see, this is a body of work that cannot be denied. Looking at a film that glorifies them is a problem, because the glorification of them also glorifies their message. But most people don't think critically about their message. Their main message is disrespect of black women. The second message is to identify each other as niggas. And people may take offense. People may not take offense. The point is that we have to do better for the next generation. It may have served the purpose in the past, but as far as I'm concerned, it's a form of disrespect, self-hate, black self-hate in the past and on to the next generation as a legacy is completely unacceptable to me. 345 instances of self-aggrandizement. This is also a psychological issue wherein many of the African-American males have very low levels of self-esteem. And that's why they're so boastful, because they want to overcompensate for their low level of self-esteem. Most rappers have low levels of self-esteem. Tupac, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry. If you do the research, I'm talking about critical analysis, he had self-esteem issues, and that's why he was so braggadocious to overcompensate. He self-aggrandizement, always trying to make himself appear to be better than someone else, but then also disrespecting other people to make them feel as if they're less than what he was. This is a psychological issue that is afflicting many, many, many young African-American males, because we weren't raised properly and we weren't loved properly, and therefore we developed low levels of self-esteem, and all the media programming was negative about us, that we're all gangbangers and, you know, we all have baby mama drama and all this, and we're all drug addicts and all that. It lowers self-esteem. So what do? We self-aggrandize. 345 instances of self-aggrandizement, calling women bitches 208 times, and just in 3 hours and 9 minutes, calling women bitches, a form of disrespect that has been normalized. I have to say this too, because one of the challenges within the African American community that really needs to be addressed is that so many African American women have been abused for so many generations, and most of the abuse these days is at the hands of African American males. In some cases, their fathers; in some cases, the people they're in relationships with. That they accept the abuse, and they consider the abuse to be okay, even when it's put within the scope of entertainment. So I've seen African-American women who went to go see the film, and on their Facebook page, they're saying, oh, this film was, it was great. And I'm thinking to myself, this film was all about, and in part, it was about disrespecting you. How they portrayed black women was very, extremely disrespectful. Scantily clad, shaking that booty, doing all this kind of sexualized content, extremely disrespectful. Giving blowjobs in bathrooms. This is extremely unnecessary to show this, but they're giving a representation of you as a black woman. And there are black women who saw it. And because it's in the movie, somehow it's okay. And it's entertainment, so somehow it's okay. But it speaks to a deeper issue. And the issue is that so many black women have been raised to hate themselves and to accept these levels of abuse, in particular from black men, that it's become normalized and they don't even think about it. And they will even accept it as being okay in the form of entertainment. It's just some things to think about. That's what I'm saying. When we look at NWA and even outside the scope of the movie, in terms of its overall sociological impact, it's quite profound, especially as it relates to black self-hate. The term fuck was used 198 times. Motherfucker 197 times is derivative of fuck. Disrespect of black men 193 times. So it's not just the disrespect of black women. You have over the course of 48 tracks, disrespect of black men. References to dick or penis 96 times. References to guns 93 times. That's the other thing in the film, Straight Outta Compton. There were a lot. There was that whole persona of the black quote unquote gangster with the guns and the gats and pulling out guns, and all of a sudden people bringing out these guns and chasing people through hallways. That's all negative racial stereotypes that the movie is actually promoting. I found that to be quite fascinating. You would expect someone like Ice Cube, who should have progressed by this time, Dr. Dre, who should have progressed by this time, who are executive producers, to at least try to limit the amount of negative racial stereotypes that they were presenting unnecessarily. Some of it I understand. You can present it, but not like they were doing inside of the film. In the film, it was almost like the glorification. You about to kill another dude, another black man, and then afterwards, everyone was laughing about it like it's okay. And then afterwards, the African-American man that she was chasing down the hallway trying to shoot, the reason why he was there was because his girlfriend was participating in this sex party. And then after you chase him down the hall with the gun, you take the young African-American woman who doesn't have a bra on, you take her and push her out of the hotel room and push her head away and say bye, whatever her name is. And everyone in the theater starts to laugh.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. Yep.
See, only... You can only get away with doing something like that if you're dealing with black women. Because if it was any other person, people would have sympathized on some level. They said, wait a minute, that's a human being. You can't treat her like that. But see, black women have been so afflicted and so demoralized that when you do a black woman like that, it's okay. It's entertainment. It's funny. It's hilarious. See, you would expect someone like Ice Cube and Dr. Dre, at this point in their life to have at least a moniker of respect. To where something like that was not done. And it can go throughout the whole movie. Again, I'm going to do a whole analysis of the movie in the next couple of days. General violence against black men, 88 times. Okay, that can be shooting them. That can be fighting with them or beating them up. In some cases, it's a sexual assault, taking a broomstick and shoving it up another African-American male's ass. Okay, that's how what they say inside the back. Their actual lyrical composition, this is general violence against black men. Disrespect of other black rappers, 91 times. References to drugs, 87 times. And really the glorification of it. Not to say, look, you shouldn't. There's only a couple instances where Dr. Dre talking about, I don't smoke weed, but then his album comes out and it's titled The Chronic. Really? All right. General violence against black men, drugs, references to sex, the term fuck, 86 times. One of the major themes that was presented throughout their discography was simply sexual promiscuity. And they were living sexually promiscuous lifestyles. So it made sense that that was being promoted. But is that a legacy that should be passed on to the next generation? Absolutely not, because it brings up so many issues within African-American community, unwanted pregnancies, absentee fathers, sexually transmitted diseases, dysfunctional male-female relationships, unhealthy family institutions, so forth and so on. The movie, they really could have been used to take the time to say, look, Dr. Dre has all these babies, mamas with, and all these children with all these baby mamas. Eazy-E died of AIDS, and he also had all these baby mamas, and he had all these children. One of the things that we can do as a community is make sure that we live sexually disciplined lives so that we're not creating these types of dynamics that are very dysfunctional. And they could have done something like that, and I would have been like, okay, cool, at least they have some kind of a moral to the story. Negative references to black female bodies, 82 times, and this is just in 3 hours, 3 hours and 9 minutes. Alcohol, 86 times. References to money, 78 times. Suck my dick, 62 times. In just 3 hours, references to fellatio, 62 times. Fuck the police, 52 times. So here we have fuck the police being said 52 times, but in terms of general violence against black men, it's 88. Fuck the police, 52 times, but general disrespect of black women, 553 times. So this is a contradiction, but this contradiction can only be revealed through critical analysis. And so that's what I'm saying, for women to want to listen to this music, or for black women in particular, or black women wanting to go to the theater to go support this particular film, it really speaks to the deeper issues that we have as African-American people. The levels of self-hate that we have are quite profound.
Now that goes to that difference, right? Because what you're doing, you're actually listening to what's being said. And you're picking it apart. That's the critical analysis. Whereas Everybody else just hears music. They don't care. The beat sounds good. I don't care what they're saying. So that's that difference. Consciously, they just, the beats are good. They hear a little, F-bomb here, a little, F the police there. Fine. But subconsciously, they're picking up all the negativity. Whereas you're doing the opposite. You're consciously listening to every little thing that's being said. And like, hello, that's the problem right there. Is that, yeah, so what if the beats sound tight and the scratches are, off the chain, whatever, but the message is reaching the subconscious is like that epigenetics, like Bruce Lipton's work, the environment, this music's all around, everybody's car is bumping and this is playing. People who have their headphones, this is playing. People are on the radios, whatever, this is playing. So it's all around and it's influencing the subconscious to look at black females as bitches and think of all the sexual stuff and just, it's all around, but they don't see it that way. They don't realize what they're in.
Yes. Yes, but that's the programming too. Like what you were saying was not realizing it's subconscious. When you realize it is conscious, you have to be able to have a level of consciousness to really think critically about what it is that you're receiving. But if you're not thinking about it, like you said in the beginning, you're basically accepting it on the subconscious level because you're not thinking about it. So just imagine people listening to this language and the major themes over and over again, that and they're not thinking about it. What they're really allowing to take place is their subconscious mind is being programmed with all of the disrespect of black women, the language, niggas, bitches, hoes, self-aggrandizement, references to fellatio and sucking dick and all this kind of stuff and living a sexually promiscuous lifestyle, it becomes ingrained within the subconscious. And what happens is over time, some of that programming is going to play itself out unconsciously in their life. There's no doubt about it. As an example, there were males that I knew growing up in Southern California in San Diego, which is about two hours south of Los Angeles, where NWA first started producing their content. And before they heard NWA, they were living in some of my schoolmates. They were living in a middle class type of a situation. Two parent household, had a nice house. Parents had nice cars. And they well spoken, they dressed, because they had money. I grew up poor, but they had money. They, relatively speaking, they had money. But then they started listening to NWA. There was other groups too, but NWA in particular. And because of the programming, now things began to change. How they started to speak began to change. How they began to dress began to change. Now they're calling each other niggas. They're calling black women bitches in particular. Whereas before, they didn't even do that. Before, they were surfing and, having good time, out doing wonderful things. But now all of a sudden, because of the programming and not thinking about it critically, it's going directly into the subconscious mind and begin to change their psychology and then ultimately enact at the level of behavior modification. So now their behavior becomes reflective of the programming that they receive and they're completely oblivious to it. That's called mind control. So that's what I'm saying. Like, thinking critically about all this is key. And you can think critically about any given media artifact. But for now, for all these years later, 25 years later, for this movie to come out of Hollywood, in essence, executive produced by Dr. Dre and Ice Cube, and really done in such a way to create these hero archetypes in the form of Eazy-E, Dr. Dre, and Ice Cube, speaks to the degree of manipulation, because what's taking place is 25 years later, the next generation is being indoctrinated into looking into NWA and listening to the programming, which I've already outlined statistical analysis that anyone can compile. And we have to ask the critical question, is that in the best interest of the individual so affected? And the answer is absolutely not.
And isn't it interesting that this comes out, right? And you're pointing all this out about all the negativity for the new generation, but yet in the public mainstream realm, everybody's having a conniption about a damn Confederate flag representing mm-hmm. slavery. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Isn't that something, right?
Yes.
But when they do it to themselves, when it's blacks on blacks, nah, it's our culture, dog. What?
Yeah, well, see,
what are you talking about? And that's the misinformation. Mm-hmm. That's the the false identification with it.
Yes.
And it goes back before rap in the 80s. We go back, maybe the 60s, 70s with the Shaft.
Black exploitation.
All the pimping and all this mm-hmm. stuff, and the women wanting the guy that's going to slap her, like, ooh, he's my man. Like, what are you talking mm-hmm. about? Again, it still mm-hmm. goes back.
Yes, and you bring up some important points. I always said the precursor to hip-hop was black exploitation. I call it black exploitation, but the general term is black exploitation films. That's where a lot of the pimp programming that came out in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, and there were rappers who picked up on that. Even later on, Snoop Dogg, his whole archetype is the pimp. The pimp archetype. That's what he's been promoting for a long time. At first, it was kind of like gangster, but then it began to change into a pimp archetype. There's a lot of rappers who adopted that particular philosophical ideal, very disrespectful towards African-American women. But the thing I want to point out, too, because a lot of people, this is the truth, but people don't like to say it. It makes people uncomfortable. And in the African-American community, you're not supposed to say this, but it is a true truth. And that is that we can kill each other. And in fact, we can go and watch a film of black people killing each other or disrespecting each other. We can actually see it in the community taking place, and we don't want to tell nobody. We don't want to snitch. But as soon as someone else disrespects one of us, now we take offense. But this speaks to the deeper issue of black self-hate. See, we hate ourselves so much that it's okay for us to kill each other and harm each other. And it's the truth. A lot of people won't take offense. What's the truth? It's an issue of self-hate. It's a psychological issue. It's okay for us to do it because we know that we hate each other. But when someone else does it, now we're upset about it. Now we want to get up and want to march and we want to go talk about the Confederate flag. I mean, even the Confederate flag, real quickly here. I was talking to my wife about this. People are so up in arms about this. The Confederate flag been around for a long time. It's, and wasn't no one tripping off of it. Wasn't nobody concerned. It just takes a media driven kind of event to really get people riled up about a non-issue. And so people are taking, and the Confederate flag is all about slavery. And I just think to myself, what flag were flying on slave ships?
Right.
Was it the Confederate flag? No. People go do the research. What flag? I'll let people, you go do the research and find it out for yourself. So what I'm saying is that intellectually speaking, the notion of getting all riled up about a Confederate flag while defending somehow, because really by proxy, you're defending the regular old flag. Okay. The red, white, and blue with the stars. Stars and old glory, as they say. Mm-hmm. The notion of doing that, it becomes a moot point, because ultimately the flag, and y'all do the research, the flag that was being flown was the regular old glory. That's the flag that was being flown on slave ships. Okay, so somehow we're going to get upset about the Confederate flag because a white person, you know, was supposedly went into this church to shoot. He was holding one. But then we don't take the next step and look at the regular flag that many of us are okay with. See, that's what I mean. Like, in terms of intellectually speaking, there's a lot of disconnect that is taking place. But the only reason why people got all riled up about the Confederate flag is because they've associated with racial discrimination, in particular, white violence against black people. In the case of the shooting that took place at the I think it was in South Carolina, maybe North Carolina, South Carolina.
Charleston, right?
Yeah, Charleston. Yeah, it took place in Charleston. It was a racially charged type of an event. And then associated with that racially charged event was the Confederate flag. So now people get all riled up about that. But there's people being killed all the time, African-American people, by other African-Americans. And we don't see the same type of outrage. Why? Because it's not a racial issue in a sense that it's not the two quote unquote competing races, white race and black race. As soon as it becomes black against white, now it's a major issue. But when it's black and black, it may be a little bit of an issue, but not as much of an issue as comparatively speaking. That's another psychological issue that needs to be addressed within the African-American community. And it really speaks to the levels of self-hate that we have. It's okay for us to kill each other. It's okay.
Wrapping up here towards the end here, I'm just going to throw out a few things that maybe you might take on for some future projects or for the listening audience to look into themselves. Touching on the all this hoopla with the Confederate flag representing something, you know, you would think then maybe the black communities would address, we need to ban red and blue handkerchiefs or bandanas, because we're killing each other. So that's what represents, that's what's creating the problems, is these bandanas. So get rid of that, and then you get rid of the blood and crypt thing. If the flag or colors, you know, on a cloth is what really, you know, represents all this, you know, negativity.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then at work, I took this further with someone. I just thought of something. I was like, wait a minute, if all this is going on because of a flag representing slavery, then I think then the next logical step would be to start banning any kind of cross-like looking artifacts, because crosses symbolize torture and death, and that's, you know, that supposedly killed a whole bunch of people's savior, so that's got to be banned. And, you know, if we're going to take it logically to the next level, you know, this insanity, you know. So that was something I was thinking about. But man, over this last hour or so, some of the things you touched on made me think of this documentary I just saw last night. I was looking for a documentary, this footage to share with Mark Devlin, you know, him out of the UK.
Yes.
Because he was talking about the music industry, just like you were, with all this influence and negativity. And I remember, especially the mind control aspect of it. And I found this documentary, The Last Days of Left Eye, from TLC. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty interesting in there to see how there's stuff in there I didn't even know about this young woman. She died, I think, at 27 back in 1999 or something like that, or 2002. But what was interesting to me is, as you were talking about all the negative sexual messages and nobody coming out with the positive messages, it stood out for me that in this documentary, they showed how TLC, their first album, some of their costumes, their outfits, Lisa Left Eye came out wearing condoms. It was made, you know, she had like a whole bunch of different condoms hanging on. And I think even her left eye was covered by
a
condom
that.
On that. I was like, wow. And then later on, when the song Creep came out, she was against, she didn't want to do that song because she didn't want to promote the cheating black female, the cheating females on the men. Just because the man cheated, that the woman now has the right to go out and become a slut, basically. And she was against that. But, you know, there's the industry forcing her into that. And eventually that's how the group, you know, fell apart. She, you know, left the group, disappeared and started doing her own thing, went to South America or whatever. But that was interesting to me that, you know, there was still young artists that can see what was going on, the manipulation, you know, negativity in the sexual lyrics and all this stuff, and was against it. But anyway, I digress. That was one thing. Another thing with this whole part of the reason why I wanted you on the show with this topic, with this, you know, black topic and all this, is because in my own little researching, I've come across these films. I don't know if you've seen them. The what was it? Hidden Colors trilogy.
Yes.
There's like three of them, and he's working on a fourth one. And I find that very interesting how I go to the mafia. All the white cultures and other cultures have mafias worldwide. You have Italian mafia, Russian mob. You have even Japanese Yakuza, the Chinese triads. All these cultures have global mobs, mafias. But yet, the black people, the black culture, there's no global mafia. Why is that? I was always curious about it. People would throw up, oh, there's Bloods and Crips Nation. It's like, no, but that's in the U.S. That's not global. Mm-hmm. So there's a particular reason why all the other cultures do not want blacks to be empowered or have some kind of unity. And I think that goes right into the self-hate that wind up. Have this negativity in the black community, and now they ate it up, and now they're doing it to themselves without realizing that, in my opinion, in the research I've done, that now this takes it in a whole different direction, but this could, you know, shed light on a bigger picture, is that the black culture or the black man, woman were the original species on this planet. And then when that visitation, quote unquote visitation or genetic manipulation by other beings, and we take it again into the new age area of like the Pleiadians or whatever, that's like a white culture that came. And that's why things are the way they are now, where the original man, black, has been suppressed. And any attempts of power, knowledge, of freeing themselves has to be suppressed. And that's why we have that constant keeping the black culture down, because that's the original man or you know, beings from this planet. Not to create any racial discrimination or separation. It's looking at possible, you know, hey, there might be something here, and we might need to address that. Even the well-intentioned white people out there might not even realize their own ancestral history or why things are the way they are, and why we live in a world that has this quote-unquote white privilege and all that. You know, we can see a semblance of that in this movie, in this music, and in the work that you're trying to put out, showing, look, black people, why are we destroying each other? There's a reason. Maybe there's a reason for this that we need to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also believe that it's up to us to find the reason and also to develop the solution. So it's not enough to outline the different degrees of manipulation and what has gotten African-American folk to where they're at, or quote-unquote black folk where they're at. We also have to develop solutions. And my wife and I were very clear about this, that one of the permanent solutions that we can fortify is positive male-female relationships, because that's where it all starts in the first place, and healthy family institutions, because that's how you build into the future. I also want to mention that one of the reasons why you don't see a codified black mafia, if you will, is because black people in general are so disjointed from each other. Part of that has to do with African enslavement and how spread across the globe under dire situations and circumstances, it was difficult and still continues to be difficult for black people to relate to each other and connect with each other in positive, meaningful and positive ways. And then on top of that, you have all the levels of self-hate. You have dysfunctional male-female relationships. You have broken family institutions. And oftentimes what happens is how we see each other is so negative. So the notion of us connecting with each other in positive ways almost becomes impossible. Now, again, we can say that there are systems in place that has caused this to be the case. And we can see that there are systems in place that are maintaining this type of dire situation for some African-American or most African-American folk throughout the diaspora. However, this does not absolve African-American people from being personally responsible and transforming their lives in positive ways, because we all have the power to do that. One of the things you have to begin to do is to think critically. That's how I opened up my my update series. Make sure people get on YouTube and check out my update series for my documentary, NWA, A Critical Analysis. One of the things I state in the beginning of that particular series of videos, and it's ongoing, is that really it's up to us. You know, it's up to us to develop the solutions. And how do we do that in the first place? We have to engage in critical analysis and use our mental faculties. We have to have proper intellectual process, because that's how you identify what the problems are, and then you begin to solve the problems. It's easy to simply become emotional, become irate, yell and scream, fuss and fight, and talk about what we think other people are doing to us, but it's not proactive. What is proactive is being calm, collected, thinking critically, engaging in proper intellectual process, and figuring out what we need to do to solve the problems that we face. And we do have the power to do that. And once we begin to do that, I think that we will be more respected globally as a people. But that's a long time in the making, but we have to start somewhere. I would say that critical thinking in the first place is key, proper intellectual process, establishing positive male-female relationships and healthy family institutions. This is the gateway to what people would call our ultimate liberation.
Well said, Lennon. Well said. Yeah, it's part of the diagnosis. Realize the problem. The problem lies within yourselves and within oneself. So the solution lies within oneself. Fix yourself. And then, you know, we all start fixing ourselves. And next thing you know, everybody's doing the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Well, Lennon, I think that's about it. We'll wrap it up here. Thanks for joining me. And if you'd like to come back on sometime in the future when you get done with the documentary or come across any new information or something you'd like to share, just contact me anytime and we'll be glad to have you on. So in closing, you give out your websites or any information or books or anything that you might like people to look into.
Yeah, sure, Ivan. My website is LennonHonor.com. All of my documentaries are on LennonHonorFilms.com. Also have a YouTube page, Lennon Honor Films. I update there every once in a while. So, check that out. I have the update videos for my documentary being uploaded there.
Okay.
Also, I'm on Facebook under Lennon Honor and Twitter under Lennon Honor. And I want to encourage people to also check out, if you can Google, check out 911. Type in Lennon Honor and 911 because we are in a particular window of time right now, every single year. That I call the 911 fear-based mind control program. And everything is playing itself out perfectly. It's a script that is run as a tool of psychological warfare on the global population every single year on the global population within the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th. I call it the 911 fear-based mind control program. So I want to encourage people to check out my film work, my video work on that particular topic. You can Google Lennon Honor 911 or Lennon Honor September 11th, and then the video archive should show up there. And I also want to thank you, Brother Ivan. It's good to talk with you. You know, I've seen you in person several times already, so it's good to finally get on your show. And hopefully once the documentary is done, you'll have me back on. I would appreciate that.
No problem. Thanks for coming on, and thanks for being so eloquent. That's one thing that, you know, hey, they would say he sounds pretty white. You mean he sounds smart? You mean he's not sounds smart? He's not here talking, you know, all dog and you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and I'm from
the
Bronx. I was raised around that, so I'm very familiar with, you know, this topic. And yeah, that's one thing. One other thing I wanted to say real quick that shocks me is now that I'm out here in the West in Arizona around a lot of, you know, white people, when I go back to New York and I hear even the Puerto Ricans calling each other, you know, this nigga here, this nigga, I'm like, whoa, what the hell? What's going on?
Yeah.
But that's part of that conditioning.
It's part of the
program that needs to be broken.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Well, Lennon, thanks for being on. Taking us out now, we'll end this with another Diesel Automatic song. This is more of a positive song. So this is Hip Hop for Change Part 2. Again, this is Ivan from Phoenix. You've been listening to Guy Next Door Speaks. And hopefully won't be too long before I have the next show on. Maybe we'll have another good special guest in a near future. Thanks for listening and be well.
Yeah. Diesel Automatic. Hip Hop for Change. Started way back in the day. Hey. They did it for the love, not for the pay. It was all about united people, ripping the shows, splitting the flows with a message to open a mind if it was closed. Nowadays it's all about getting the dough, flipping the drugs, hitting the club every night, sipping the mold, living the thug life. Rappers are depicting an image that is based on fiction. Materialism, ignorance, egoism's what I'm hearing in the lyrics they be spitting. They say how much they getting, not how much they giving. They disrespect fans by bragging about how they living. Disrespecting women, lying and fibbing. By glamorizing crime, they helping to fill the prisons. Influencing minds of the people and the children. Think it's about time for the realness to hit them.
Get them.
Diesel Auto, smashing the whack cats. Rapping the stack cash. Grammys and platinum plaques. Talking about swag, they are. All of that's a fad, hey. All of that's a trend, hey. All of that's pretend, hey. All that fake rhyming, time to put it to an end, hey. We need MCs to teach the people how to grow. Lead them in the right direction, help them free their mind and soul. Help them see the sun they never saw before. Give them knowledge they couldn't find on their own. Diesel auto flow, I'm rhyming on the microphone to remind all my people that they are not alone. I do this for the ones that are silenced by oppression, injustice, poverty, and violence. For the people in the everyday struggle, trying to maintain while staying out of trouble. For everybody on the Earth space shuttle, hip hop for change is my way to say that I love you.